It is hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey at 1:45. Where are we at in society? Does an elephant deserve human rights? A New York court apparently must decide. At Flex 30, Chad recaps the 7-on-7 event over the weekend, including the quarterback who first jumped out to him. And in mere minutes, it is our weekly chat with the great Joe Cook of ITon3.com and the 1-0 podcast. I'm Trey Elling. Cameron Parker is behind the glass, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two on a Monday. As soon as we are done, it's Ball Don't Lie with Rod and Harge. 7 o'clock, Soccer Matters. Tough weekend, in a way, for Austin FC. They got a draw, though. A draw better than a loss in their world. Full recap of all of that with Soccer Matters. And at 8 o'clock, it is Instant Serious. If you haven't checked out our Monday night stuff, and like Trey told you, we'll get you the Flex 30 segment coming up at 1:30. Tell you about last weekend's 7-on-7. Tell you how you can find out about next weekend's 7-on-7 event, because it is that time of year. It is also that time of year where Texas baseball is trying to get itself in position to maybe host a regional. Or is that chance already gone? Let's get into it on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline and talk to Joe Cook. We do it every week about this time. Inside Texas on 3.com, and he's at JosephCook89 on Twitter. Joe, how are you?
Doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, so let's just jump right in with this baseball team. Obviously, it couldn't have gone any better against Kansas. They get the sweep. Melendez hits more homers, tying the record at this point. And then they even have a comeback aspect to Game 3. They got that part of it done, which gets them to 39 wins. Is there a path, you think, for Texas baseball to host a regional, or is that something that you think has already gone by?
There is a path. That path would have gone away had they lost to Kansas at any point this weekend, and especially if they had dropped 2-3. So getting that sweep, that comeback win, fueled by Skylar Messenger's grand slam, kind of a storybook slam, that helps that path stay alive. And as I wrote about it on Inside Texas, it's a narrow path. Texas, finishing, fifth in the conference, in a conference ranked third in RPI among conferences between the ACC and the SEC, that's not the strongest of resumes. Yes, they've got 39 wins because it's one of the few schools, I think, to go ahead and complete the, try to play 56, 57 games, use the entire allotment. So those 39 wins are a little bit misleading considering the 14 and 11 mark within the Big 12 play. But all that is to say is that if they go to Arlington and, notch a win against Oklahoma State and then maybe, take down what it would be TCU yet again after taking the series and, work their way, I think they have to work their way at least to the Big 12 tournament finals to really feel like they've got a strong chance at hosting. I think if they fall short of that at any point, they'll probably be a 2-seed sent somewhere. I saw D1 today predicted, or had a projection with them going to College Station along with the Roadrunners and with the Black Knights of Army, which would be a pretty formidable regional, not only for the in-state teams, but Army being the top team from the Patriot League, even after A&M had a good season. So, I think it's one of those things where they got to start winning games, building more resume, adding more resume, building wins, and improving their they're pretty good RPI, but if they fall short of, the conference tournament finals, there's no chance. If they make the conference tournament finals, they have a chance. And I think winning the Big 12 tournament, if they were able to pull that off, I think that would net them a top 16 spot, maybe spot number 16.
Probably going to be asking you this every week, Joe, going forward until Texas is out of it, considering that they have won 5 of 6 in conference now to end the regular season. Heading into the conference tournament, what do you think their chances are of making a run to Omaha?
It's going to be tough. It'd be a lot easier if they were, playing at home at least once this postseason. I think, honestly, this Big 12 tournament is going to be very revealing in a lot of ways because this is going to be an occasion where you see David Pierce. He doesn't really have time to experiment anymore with the bullpen or with the pitching staff. He doesn't really have time to experiment and maybe throw Lucas Gordon first on Wednesday and save Pete Hansen. This team needs wins. So you're going to see him throw out what he thinks is his best pitchers on a game-by-game basis, as you know, until depth starts getting depleted and he has to throw some more arms out there. But you know, I think this upcoming weekend is going to be very revealing. You feel confident about Pete Hansen in pretty much any situation. Lucas Gordon, he's not to Pete Hansen status yet, but he's, you know, pitched well throughout the course of this season, earning that number two spot. After that, you know, it's hit or miss. And even with as good as the hitting is, even with as good as the defense is, you know, nationally elite on both fronts, it's just hard to count on outscoring someone game after game after game. I could definitely see this team getting hot in a regional and making it to the super regional, and then depending on matchup, you know, it's a crapshoot from there. But even though we thought about it at the beginning of the year, I don't know if this team has Omaha potential, and I think you can just look at the volatility of the pitching staff as reason why it's hard for me to see them making a trip to Nebraska.
Talking with Joe Cook. Remember to check out InsideTexas.com, On3.com for the latest info. Joe, you kind of answered my next question. I was going to ask about that pitching staff. It definitely sounds like you're saying you think he's got two options. He's got Hansen. He's got Gordon. What happens after that? That third game, do you see that as becoming a Johnny Allstaff type of game, or do you think there's another name there that Pierce is going to give him a shot in game three?
At least over the past couple of weeks, it seems like that's become a role for Zane Morehouse. And of the staff, he's one of the guys that has definitely shown some improvement over the course of the year. At first, I kind of thought that would be as an opener role to maybe bridge to Tristan Stevens. But now I think you can kind of just maybe piggyback Morehouse to Stevens. You know, if you can get one to go three innings or so and then another to go four innings, that reduces the amount of innings you have to put on the remainder of that bullpen, especially guys, you know, if that's your game three plan, especially guys who may be a little bit further down the list on bullpen arms. So I think you can be pretty pleased with how Zane Morehouse has developed. Now, it hadn't been perfect all year, but he's definitely done a lot of improving and earned that role, as well as some other factors helping him into that role. But I think you look at Zane Morehouse maybe being that third guy, piggybacking with Tristan Stevens, and then if you get to game four and five, you're just trying to – you and every other team at that juncture is just – trying to get as much as they can out of the arms available in those last one to two games.
Joe, shifting to the recruiting side of things right now, starting with football and then getting into basketball, it's all about the transfer market. Of course, Texas just lost out on Jordan Addison, who ultimately did decide on USC on Friday. Just how close were the Longhorns to landing Addison's services, and ultimately why did he decide to go with the Trojans?
I don't think it was a courtesy visit per se, or a throw off the trail visit for any sort of, you know, I don't even know what word to use here, but just perceived help into the portal from USC. I think he came to Texas, of course, with thanks to his previous connection with Brennan Marion, and looked at what Steve Sarkisian could offer in his offense. Of course, Quinn Ewers is there. Of course, there's Xavier Worthy, Marion, all the different allures of Austin, Texas. But I think ultimately he went with, you know, some familiarity with, Caleb Williams, as well as, you know, liking the scheme that Lincoln Riley offers. And then just everything else about L.A. And, you know, it'd be naive to think that both Texas and USC didn't put together an NIL package. I don't know exactly the specifics on either front of those, but, you know, I think all things are going to end up, when it comes to Texas and USC, things will end up being equal in that regard. And, you know, at the end of the day, it just seems like he had a preference for Caleb Williams and that scheme, and that's where he ended up headed.
Joe, staying with recruiting and football, other side of the ball, obviously there's different transfers out there. I'm hearing there's a grad transfer linebacker maybe on campus, either now or is about to be. What updates do we have on other guys?
Yeah, so Diamante Tucker Dorsey, and we talk a little bit about him in the Inside Scoop on Inside Texas. I've been in touch with him, and yeah, he's making his way or is currently on campus right now for an official visit. He's a second-team FCS All-American out of James Madison University, a linebacker, and he's kind of undersized as far as Power 5 linebackers go. 5'11 range, I think 210 to 214, but he's a tackle machine. I think he tallied over 100 last year for the Dukes, and part of the reason why he's looking to move up to the next level is because James Madison is moving up to the next level, and as a result of some NCAA rules, they can't compete for a conference title this year in the Sun Belt. So he's looking to win a title. He's looking to take advantage of his last year, I believe, in college football, and show that he can do it on a level above where he was at. Texas is going to look at him. I think he's told me he wants to have a decision by the end of this week. And, Texas, along with Central Florida, the only two schools that I know of that have received visits among new offers of Ole Miss, Auburn, Texas A&M, I think a couple other schools, Florida State. So, this is something to monitor. I think if we hear some positive news coming out of this visit, it'll kind of show, where Texas is heading at this position. But if not, maybe their research will show something.
Take a drink, Joe. Take a drink.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's just, Texas pursuing portal options available to it that popped up very late at a position of need.
Joe, on the basketball side of things, Tyrese Hunter, the current Big 12 Freshman of the Year in men's basketball, is leaving Iowa State, and Texas is in the running for his services. He's expected to make an announcement this week as to whether he's going to end up at Texas, Tennessee. I believe there's one other school in there, too, Purdue. Do you think he ultimately lands with the Longhorns?
I think Texas has put together as good a pitch as any school could for this recruitment. The thing is, I think if he comes here, he'll probably shoot to the top of at least kind of that point guard. And that's where Texas needs a true point guard. I don't know exactly if Texas is the team to beat, but I think that they've, considering Purdue and Tennessee, I think they've put as strong a foot forward as anybody. And Chris Beard has shown that he does pretty well with players in the portal. So, I don't have a prediction on this one, but I think Texas has put as good a foot forward as possible. Having a new arena helps. I think Chris Beard maybe having some experience and knowledge of Hunter from playing against him and coaching against him this past year will probably help some, but remains to be seen. And like you said, we're looking for a decision the first half of this week.
That is Joe Cook. Check out InsideTexas.com, On3.com. He's at JosephCook89 on Twitter as well. Joe, we appreciate the time, man. We know you're a little under the weather, so thank you for toughing it out for us. Have a good week, and we'll hit you next week.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Good stuff there from Joe Cook. Wow, Trey. Diamante Tucker Dorsey?
Mm-hmm.
A little DTD? It's not bad. Acronym's pretty good.
You're bigger on the acronyms than I am.
Well, I'm just saying I know what the kids do now.
Don't think the DTD sounds all that good.
When you go with three names, they love to go with the acronym. If that third letter was different, you might have something even better. But I think DTD could work.
I don't know. I just don't think it's that good. I think we're better off calling him by his last name or one of the last names.
Tucker.
Or the first name and the last name.
Tucker Dorsey. All right, there you go. Linebacker transfer from James Madison, going to be visiting the Longhorns. Yes, on Friday, late Thursday into Friday, it was officially announced that Jordan Addison had picked USC over Texas. All right, so a lot of stuff out there today. Obviously, we'll hit some NBA throughout the show. We have hit the Mavs down 3-0, and game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals is tonight. Also, Trey, we have a weird side story from a sports story over the weekend. You and I probably didn't watch, but are you aware that there was a thrilling comeback victory in soccer over the weekend?
Yes, it happened with Austin FC last night, right?
Well, Austin FC had an exciting game, but on the international level, Manchester City had a thrilling comeback that a lot of folks have been talking about. They scored like 3 goals in 5 minutes or something. But the side,
that's a lot in soccer.
But the side story is that Oasis star Noel Gallagher ended up covered in blood because of it.
Oasis star Noah Gallagher.
Correct. Did I say that wrong?
You said Oasis.
Oasis, I'm
like,
sorry.
Wait a second. Oasis,
yes.
Okay.
One of the Gallagher brothers in Oasis ends up covered in blood and needed stitches in his face after he was accidentally headbutted by Ruben Diaz's father as they celebrated the thrilling comeback.
I'm guessing that headbutt wasn't accidental.
No, I don't think it was. According to Noel, quote, "As the third goal goes in, there's absolute bedlam in the stadium where we sit. Ruben Diaz's family are in the box, couple boxes up. So I'm jumping around like an idiot, passing my 11-year-old son around like the Premier League trophy. Everyone is lifting him up, and I turn around, and Ruben Diaz's dad runs straight into me, headbutts me. I'm on the floor covered in blood. I didn't see the last 2 minutes. I got to get taken down by the St. John's ambulance and had to get stitched up. I've got stitches in my top lip. I've got 2 black eyes.
That's tough.
That's serious celebration right there.
You ever gotten hurt celebrating?
Not to that level. No. No, I'm not really that guy. I'm not the break my stuff guy, and I've not had any of the – I've certainly never been headbutted. Never gone to that level.
I feel like you would be a good headbutter.
Oh, I could probably deliver a good one. I got a big head, big noggin.
It's solid on top of the forehead there, which is where you're supposed to hit somebody.
I could probably deliver a pretty good blow. And apparently, so can Diaz's dad. Gallagher says he's a big bear of a man. Almost knocked my teeth out. As I'm going down the corridor, Pep's running up crying, and we kind of hug each other, and he says, "What's up with your face?" I'm guessing that's his kid. "I look like I've had my head smashed in. It's unbelievable. A lot of City fans are asking, are you all right? What's happened?" I say, "You'll never guess." So there you go. A lot of excitement over the weekend. Hopefully you did not get headbutted and bloodied because of it. So we have also talked a little football off the field with more Jimbo Fisher comments over the weekend. Nick Saban trying to clarify some things in the latter part of the week. Trey, we even had Steve Spurrier enter the mix, which does make a story a little better. If you're going to have a college football drama story, getting Spurrier to comment is good.
What did old ball coach have to say?
Well, Coach Spurrier said, "I don't know what he's mad at." No, "I don't know why he's mad at Saban." Did Saban say something that wasn't true?
According to Jimbo, yes.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So Spurrier says, "I don't think Saban told any lies in there, so I don't know what Fisher was mad about. Since he beat him last year, I guess he can talk now. He hasn't beaten much of anybody, but he beat Saban last year, but they haven't won the division or anything since he's been there. Did Saban say something that wasn't true?" I mean, I guess in a way, I get where he's going, Trey. I don't get what he is saying. Because what Nick Saban is accusing Jimbo Fisher of, nobody has that information. You don't. I don't.
No.
You can tell me what you think. He can say what he thinks is true, but I don't think anybody's got proof of what Nick Saban's talking about.
By the same token, a lot of people, Aggie fans included, would be surprised if it wasn't true.
I mean, I guess.
Because it's so out there at this point. Such common knowledge, or such common belief, I should say. Not common knowledge. Common belief that A&M paid a pretty big chunk of money to get the number one recruiting class in the country coming off of an 8-4 season.
Yeah. And again, that's all. There's a big discussion of semantics and the timing of the story. And I can tell A&M all I want to try to clarify what happened. I don't know if they can. I think they might be, maybe they're scared to clarify exactly what happened. But if you set up, I don't know, if you set it up and you ended up with this class, I think there's a better way to express it than they've expressed it. They're trying to defend it. There's nothing wrong. No laws were broken, blah, 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 blah. Just lay it out for people. It's like I said the other day, just nice short answers. Of course, we didn't buy players. We sell players on the idea of what we can provide at A&M, both educationally and athletically. And there is now a system set up that they can benefit off name, image, and likeness.
But
and we help them do that.
Technically, you're not supposed to be able to use that as part of your pitch. Do I realize that that's not how it works? Absolutely. But the letter of the law is that you're not allowed to use that as part of your pitch to get somebody to come play for you. You can maybe send them to somebody else to talk about that, compliance or whatever the department is now. But you as the recruiter, you as the coach, cannot say anything along those lines, because otherwise you are breaking that law and you subject yourself to whatever the penalty is.
Right, but you could always say you're sending them to compliance if, when they ask you for the specifics of it.
I think that if you're A&M, you have to be very careful about sending people certain directions with regards to the details with which you're still trying to uphold this lie. If you are insisting that nobody was promised anything to come to A&M before they sign their letter of intent.
But how would someone prove they were? That's the problem. I'm sort of saying Steve Spurrier doesn't have proof that that happened, right?
Well.
And neither does Nick Saban, for that matter.
There's always a paper trail, and there are also guys who maybe end up disgruntled at the situation who are all of a sudden willing to talk about what initially drew them to College Station. Like, this is something that could end up stretching out 5 or 6 years. This is something that probably 10 years down the road, we'll hear somebody from this recruiting class talk about what they got to go to A&M. So, I mean, that's 10 years down the road, so will Jimbo care all that much? Probably not. It's right around the time his contract runs out with you guys. Will he still be coached there? I don't know, but I do know that continuing to add detail to what is probably misleading information with regards to what you did or did not do to get the best recruiting class in the country is only setting you up to look like a fool down the road.
Yeah, you may be right. We've been asking the question since the beginning of this, whenever you want to consider the beginning, probably Nick opening his mouth about Bryce Young. Why are they talking about it? Why are they being so open? Back then we thought it's because they could be open about it. Now it really feels like they're trying to be careful. What can they say? When can they say it? Can they talk about any of this or not?
It's also different when you're talking about a guy on campus versus kids who are being recruited as high schoolers or grad transfers.
And maybe that explains why Jimbo Fisher thinks that this comment about the 11 guys that are, because they're on campus now. Maybe that's why he thinks that's important, because these are early enrollees and he's saying one of the 11 has an NIL deal. So to him, that's an important distinction to make. Is that why he's doing it?
Which of the 11 has an NIL deal, by the way?
I don't know. I haven't heard any specifics about which of the players it is. So the Jimbo Fisher comment came out last night from a San Antonio interview, and we were talking about that earlier in the show. Doesn't seem to be going away. The Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban, and whoever else wants in. Steve Spurrier's had a little part in this. Deion Sanders has had a little part in this. And we'll see who wants to step up next and talk a little NIL. All right, lots of stuff. We'll get back into that stuff at 2. Also, the Mavs down 3-0. That thing is over unless the Mavs can pull off something nobody's ever done. Also, before the hour's done, we'll go where we at in society. Trey's got a story about an elephant trying to get the same rights as a man from a U.S. court. But up next, let's talk Flex 30. They were going 7-on-7 in Lake Travis. We'll tell you who advanced, what quarterback stood out to me, and when can you go see some 7-on-7 if you didn't check it out this weekend and you got free time this coming weekend. We'll tell you how you can do it up next on The Horn. Cameron's going with some new music today. It's going to be the first one I don't know. Trey? Any guesses here?
No, I don't have anyone.
Cameron, who you got?
For the new two-man group Bob Moses, the song is Love Brand New.
Bob Moses?
Okay.
Have not heard of that. All right. New two-man, huh? Yeah, a la the Black Keys?
Kind of, yeah. More of an electronic group based out of Vancouver,
okay.
I believe. They got some really good music. Getting ready for a new album to come out, I believe, this year, and this is their lead single from that album.
Definitely catchy. I like it. All right, Bob Moses adding to the list. Bad Bunny and Harry Styles also have new stuff out there for you if you want to check it out. Or if, in my case, if your kid wants to check out the Harry Styles record over and over and over and over again. All right, we got more of this Jimbo Fisher stuff, college football discussion, NIL discussion coming up at 2:05. Jimbo had some comments in San Antonio over the weekend. Mavs are down 3-0. Coming up in Where Are We At in Society, Trey's got a weird story about an elephant looking for just the rights that he may be deserved, or she may be deserving of. I don't even know if it's a male or female elephant. We'll
How
get into
dare
that story.
You assume?
I shouldn't have assumed. I don't even know what kind of elephant it is. We'll get into that story coming up at 1:45.
It is a she.
It is a female elephant. All right, fair enough. All right, so, but right now, let's get into the Flex 30 segment. We'll talk some high school sports, including some 7-on-7.
Flex ATX for the best high school sports coverage. Listen to the horn and go to FLXATX.com.
If you go to FLXATX.com today, you can see coverage of the first 7-on-7 event, the SQTs at Lake Travis. I'd never been to one of these events before. It was pretty cool to get out there and check it out, Trey, mainly because it was cooler than I thought it was going to be. Wasn't as bad.
Yeah, not quite as cool as it ended up being on Sunday morning after those storms blew through, but we got a bit of a reprieve from the oppressive heat over the weekend.
Yeah, not only are these people that run the 7-on-7s, not only are they orchestrated overall, but they know now to put it early in the morning. So they cranked it up at 8:30 in the morning. It was cool to get out there. Thanks to all of the folks out at Lake Travis for having us out. Shout out to the Flex crew for getting all that they doing all that they do. And congratulations to the home standing Lake Travis team and Westwood, who both advanced to the state 7-on-7 in College Station. Westwood actually upset Westlake early on in the competition. That's how they advanced. There was a big matchup between Dripping Springs and Vandegrift that went overtime. Vandegrift ultimately advanced there, but they lost to Lake Travis in the final there. So again, two teams advance this coming weekend. We'll be telling you about it throughout the week, but it's technically Westwood's event this week with the 7-on-7s, but it's not going to be at Westwood because they're resurfacing the field. So there's going to be part of it's going to be at Dragon Stadium, part of it's going to be at Cedar Ridge, but we'll be reminding you of that. You can also check out FLXATX.com and HornFM.com for those schedules. All right, Trey, so here's one of the first guys that jumped out to me watching some SQTs, Austin Novosad, the quarterback from Dripping Springs.
Okay.
Really liked him. Now, it was fun to watch these 7-on-7s because you can see that quarterback leadership coming out with all the guys, not just Austin, but Bo Edmondson of Lake Travis and some of these other guys we got to see all showing that leadership. Quarterbacks are rocking the wristbands a lot of the times. So, I mean, they're calling plays out just like they would in a game and kind of orchestrating things. But Novosad, 6'3", 185. He's in the class of 23. And if you're a Baylor fan, I would tell you to be really happy right now. You can be cautious in a second, but right now be happy because he is committed to you. I saw him described as a hard commit today to Baylor. He also has offers from Colorado, Houston, Kansas, and Louisiana Tech. So my question on him, Trey, moving forward is when will there be other interest, and will he respond to any of that interest? I am being told that Austin may have some Aggies in his family. Don't know if that's going to be a school that may have interest later on, but he can absolutely sling it, looks the part, 6'3", nice size, and was really orchestrating the offense well, as much as you could tell on a 7-on-7.
He's been starting games since his sophomore year for Dripping Springs, and his numbers were really good last year as a junior, so it's understandable why he's being recruited by and or at least given a look by big-time college programs. Even though he doesn't have that offer from A&M just yet, they are keeping tabs on him and expect him, if he is good enough and they're really looking for quarterback help, to maybe make that offer to Austin Novosad.
Yeah, so we'll see if the level of team, not to insult the teams as he's already got offers from, or Baylor for that matter, but is there anybody else that's a little maybe higher in the rankings in the state that's going to take a look, or maybe around the country that may take a look at Austin Novosad. In fact, one moment I liked early on, he had one of his receivers, I won't dime the receiver out, but one of his receivers dropped a couple balls early, and he sent him out. He replaced him. Unless I miss some signal from a coach off in the corner, because Trey, there's technically not supposed to be coaching in 7-on-7, but there's some light coaching things that go on with all teams. I'm not just saying drip, all teams.
I don't believe you, Saban.
Yeah. So he sends a guy off, brings another guy on, and he was impressive to watch. So Austin Novosad kind of stood out to me. I thought he looked really good. And remember, we've got the All Flex watch list coming out 1 week from tomorrow. The first watch list will come out. We're starting with the defensive line. There'll be a new list every day. Just keep going to flxatx.com for the very latest. We had some parents coming up talking to us on Saturday, really excited about the idea of the All Flex team. So keep listening. Keep checking out flxatx.com and find out how you can react to it. And once those lists are out there, you can help us and help the Flex crew ultimately choose that All Flex team. So flxatx.com. And again, check that out for this weekend's 7-on-7 schedule with those SQTs. Real quick, Trey, before the break, let's get this out there too. Austin Product, speaking of a guy who was successful here, there are now two former Austin area quarterbacks on the Indianapolis Colts, and for that matter, two Westlake guys, right?
That is true. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Ellinger's already there. And now Nick Foles gets a chance to go back and hang with Frank Reich, a guy that did him a lot of good in Philly. So does this mean Sam Ellinger's about to lose his backup role?
And they signed him to a 2-year deal also.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me because so many guys end up having their careers derailed, especially the quarterback position, because their passion for the game is questioned. I guess Nick Foles is immune to that because he helped the Eagles win a Super Bowl a few years ago, but doesn't he fall squarely into that category of guys who probably is not as mentally invested in the game of football as you would hope, even for a backup quarterback?
You think that's been the issue with Nick in the league since the Super Bowl? An issue of focus?
I mean, I think it's fair that that it becomes a question once again. Like, obviously, Jacksonville signs him that very next year. Things don't work out there. He's been with the Bears the last few years, but has been an afterthought there for a lot of that time.
Yeah, so, I thought he was taking that job. As soon as he went there, I thought he was taking that job right away.
Yeah, and then they went and signed Andy Dalton this last offseason. It's like, is he just okay being that backup quarterback going forward? It's totally fine if he is. It's just it's a little bit confusing to me because everything we've heard out of Indianapolis is that they're really high on Sam Ellinger and what he might be capable of at that position at the next level. So to sign Nick Foles to a 2-year deal, it almost suggests that that's not the case. Or maybe you're getting that ultimate insurance policy for Matt Ryan if something goes wrong there.
Yeah, considering their past relationship, my gut would be that if Reich is bringing in Foles, he thinks Foles can be his backup.
Right.
But maybe it is, does he want to see the battle? Does he want to see two Westlake guys battle it out for that backup job, knowing that Matt Ryan is his guy, at least for this season?
Or maybe he's bringing Nick Foles in to help out with Sam Ellinger?
Maybe. I don't know. To be a mentor and help him, I mean.
Like, I'm sure those guys have some sort of relationship.
I don't know. That's a good question. Nick Foles going to be an Indianapolis Colt, something to keep your eyes on. And like Trey mentioned, the fact that it's a 2-year deal kind of maybe changes an angle on it too. Coming up at the 2 o'clock hour, we'll get back into the college football discussion. Jimbo Fisher with more comments over the weekend in San Antonio. You know he can't stop talking. Mavericks down 3-0. And up next, and where are we at in society? Does an elephant deserve human rights? We'll talk about it on the Horn.
Chad and Trey.
Well, I want to get you moving on a sunny day. New music out there. What you got, Cam?
Some new Surfaces.
Surfaces, okay. Not familiar with that. I've heard the name. Not familiar, though. Big deal right now?
They're up-and-coming band.
Yeah?
Alternative. Their best hit is Sunday Best, I believe. It's been on a few commercials. You probably have heard it. But a really good band. This is their latest single, I Can't Help But Feel.
There you go. Very good vibe to this one. Surfaces, Bob Moses, Bad Bunny, and Harry Styles have all been on the show today. New stuff out there from all of them if you want to check it out. We're talking a lot of football today. There's basketball on the mind. Mavs have basketball on their mind. Actually, they have the offseason on their mind now because they're down 3-0, and we all know what that means. Tonight, Boston's going to try to even it up with Miami. No Tyler Hero for sure, and Jimmy Butler's going to try to tough it out with that knee injury, so we'll see how that goes. That's ABC, 7:30 tonight. We'll get back into a little Mavs discussion, and we'll talk about what Jimbo Fisher said over the weekend that's got everybody talking because that story's not going away anytime soon. Coaches mouthing off about NIL.
No, that's just going to continue. It'll be a topic of conversation probably 5 years from now, but hopefully we will have figured some things out by then to where some of this does calm down.
Yeah, hopefully. All right, we'll get back into that discussion. If you have thoughts on it, Specs text line 337-3776. Right now, though, it's where we at, and we're talking elephants. Here we go. Feel like you know.
Is it not firing, Cam?
Does Mike Gundy not want to play today? All right. Fair enough.
May need to update the end date.
Maybe he's doing
not. Where are we at in society today?
There we
Bucky
go.
And Aaron.
I thought he started with the Sears and Roebuck.
Hey now.
Whoa, all right. I thought maybe he was doing an interview with a San Antonio station or something like that. All right, Trey, so we're talking maybe not elephants, but a particular elephant in today's story?
Yeah, before we get to that, quick recap of the Mullet Open on Friday out at Hyatt Lost Pines, Wolf Dancer Golf Course. It was a blast, as it always is. Bucky is the best at putting something like this together. Station was well represented by a number of people, past and present personalities at the horn. Brad Kellner there. He was a part of this show on Friday. Mm-hmm. It's always great to see and catch up with him. Tom McKay out there as well. And the morning show, along with Shirts and Skins, did get to broadcast live from the pavilion for the Wolf Dancer Golf Course. And I myself had a blast, Chad, getting to play with my two brothers and one of my good friends, a guy who was a groomsman in my wedding who drove in from Dallas and hadn't picked up a golf club in a year since the last Mullet Open. That is not an exaggeration. And went and hit some golf balls on the driving range beforehand, and that was it for me. And really just relying on being the D player for my team and seeing what we could do.
Well, sometimes it can work.
Well, my friend who we brought in with us, first time he's played with us, hits the ball legitimately close to 300 yards and does so consistently. And one of my other brothers is pretty good off the tee as well. And at the end of the day, I didn't even have to get on the tee box for the better part of the last 9 holes.
Oh, they just smacked it out there and y'all said, ah,
no,
we'll take
I'm
it.
Like, why am I going to waste my back and why am I going to waste a swing on this? I'll just focus on the other aspects of the game.
That's great.
And in the end, and I know you say this, and everybody's like, oh, yeah, sure you did. Nobody shoots the score they're saying at these scramble golf tournaments. But we really did, utilizing the mulligans that we bought.
Obviously.
All 8 mulligans.
Nice.
Bought 8 mulligans.
8 mulligans.
For the kids.
Well played.
Used all 8, most of which we didn't even use until the end of our round, but the mulligans all worked out to where we were making putts that was cutting a stroke or making a better shot to get us on the green, to give us give ourselves a birdie opportunity. We finished, I want to say, 7 under on the day, Chad, which was an Elling Brothers / whoever the other person is record for us.
Nice.
So it was a lot of fun. It ended up not being nearly as hot as was anticipated earlier in the week. The golf course is pretty unforgiving, but it's also a fun time, especially when you're surrounded by great company. The Whitestone guys were in the group behind us. We had some fun with them throughout the day. They got to see my ugly ass swing off the tee box a couple different times. And it was just a lot of fun. And most importantly, I think a lot of money raised for the Burke Center for Youth, which is an organization that Bucky has been giving to for a couple decades now. And I look forward to next year's tournament. And by the way, silver lining of this happening before Memorial Day this year, because my family always spends the rest of the weekend at the resort. They've got a great swimming pool and a bunch of cool activities for kids. Because it was pre-Memorial Day, the pool was not overrun with people on Saturday. That was really nice.
Very nice. Very cool. All right, tell us about this elephant, and then I have a comment for you, something you may not know about the Mullet Open.
Well, you hit me with that right now.
But no, because then we'll have to get into the discussion. Tell me about the.
Put the elephant story for tomorrow.
We got to have time for the elephant.
We'll put the elephant story for tomorrow.
All right, Tom McKay is accusing you of not playing.
What do you mean he's accusing me of not playing?
He says he got in the golf cart, he went through 18 holes, and he never saw you. So his accusation is that you and your brothers and your friend just bolted.
Well, that's not true.
I'm just telling you what's out there.
He clearly wasn't looking, or. He drove up on us on one of the holes where I didn't get on the tee box because it was a stated goal. If I don't have to get on that tee box, I'm not going to.
That's what it was, maybe. Maybe he saw one of your brothers on the tee box, didn't recognize him, and you were in the car.
I actually didn't see he or Bucky driving around at all. Normally, I'll see each of them at least one time throughout the course of the afternoon.
Yeah.
That wasn't the case, though. I promise, though. We played.
Okay.
We played.
He's claiming now it's been 2 or 3 years, and he's never seen you at this event. Could that be true?
I've been at this event.
He said he's never actually laid eyes on you during the tournament.
I've been working at this station for 6 years. We moved back here 6 years ago. Is it 7 years ago? 6 or 7 years. I've played in the tournament every year since then, except the COVID year when it was canceled.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So right.
There you go, Tom. You heard it here first. I'm just telling you what's out there. I'm trying to defend you, man.
I appreciate that.
I'm glad you guys had a good time.
I don't know why Tom McKay is starting such malicious lies. I am out there playing. I'm not playing very well, although I have to say, for not picking a golf club up for a year, I wasn't terrible. I figured something out on the driving range, also watching a ton of instructional videos.
Nice.
And it really did help with my ugly-ass swing.
Cool. All right. That can
I'll
work
even
sometimes.
Run the tip by Cam. So, Cam, you're a good golfer. So
here we go.
I have a tendency whenever I'm bringing my swing down to bring my hands through as I'm getting to the golf ball versus dropping my hands at the start of the downswing. And I started to do that more, and I was getting the ball up much more consistently and also putting it more on target than I normally am too.
Yeah, that's good. You want to make sure you drop your hands on your backswing. If not, then your hands are going to get stuck, and that can lead to a shank. That can lead to tone. It can lead to a lot of bad things.
Wow. See?
It can lead to pulling a Mito Pereira on the 18th hole.
Is that what happened?
That was rough.
It was a bad swing. I'll just say that.
I've seen that swing before. I'm just not usually seeing it there.
Yeah.
I've made that swing on 18 before. I just wasn't as important as Mito Pereira was yesterday.
Did he flat out shank one?
Yeah, he kind of, what would you call that?
JT actually shanked one. He flat out shanked an iron 100 yards.
But that was on number six. Yeah. That was earlier in the day, and he had a chance to kind of recover from it. But he bogeyed that.
Yeah.
Didn't he fight back for a bogey?
Yeah, he got up and down from the bunker for bogey, which may have ended up helping win that golf tournament yesterday.
Dude, all three of those guys. Now, Pereira didn't quite have as good a version, but Zalatoris, that up and down from the cart path, took it right off the concrete, got it up there, got a nice up and down. There were some good up and downs throughout the weekend. Pereira needed one more to get to the playoff. He couldn't figure it out, and Justin Thomas stepped in, got his second major, took advantage of it.
Seems pretty obvious to me at this point, guys, that we shouldn't be holding major golf tournaments in Oklahoma anymore.
Well, I would have figured that anyway. But
right.
Yeah. That's also the
more evidence.
Also the very first time that the 54-hole leader, is that what it is? No, the 54-hole leader, sorry, the 36-hole leader after two rounds, had always won the tournament at that golf course.
Mm.
And it was Zalatoris.
Okay.
So the fact that he didn't win actually broke. It was 7-for-7, I believe, that whoever led after two rounds. So Justin Thomas got that done, and now his first two majors are both PGA championships. All right, so unfortunately, the golf conversation takes away the elephant conversation.
We'll get to the elephant story tomorrow.
All right. Elephant's trying to get human rights, and there's a court ruling on it. I wanted to hear the story, but I had to go into some salacious golf gossip, so that's really my fault. All right, where are we at in society every day? About 1:45. Up next, Jimbo Fisher with comments from San Antonio this weekend, trying to clarify things. He's got a statement for you that he thinks clears up all of this conjecture and lets you know the lies are not true. If you haven't heard it, that's coming up. Plus, the Mavs are down 3-0. That is definitely true. They're trying to dig out of something. Plus, why today matters at 2:30. Don't move. It's the Horn.